Secuestros, no más masacres,
no más robo, no más corrupción,
no más violencia, no más manipulación,
no más hambre, no más miseria,
no más ignorancia, no más pobreza,
no más mala educación, no más desempleo,
no más asesinatos, no más tranquilos reos,
no más droga, no más tibaro, no más negocios sucios,
no más presos inocentes, no más juicios injustos,
no más milicia, no más grupos homicidas,
no más patanes soldados, no más corruptos policías,
no más niños huérfanos, no más madres solteras,
no más abuso sexual, no más mujeres rameras,
no más intolerancia, no más egoísmo,
no más desigualdades, no más racismo,
no más.
Machismo, no más feminismo,
no más narcotráfico, no más terrorismo,
no más consumismo, no más capitalismo,
no más imperialismo, no más neoliberalismo,
no más Fujimori, no más Franco, no más Pinochet,
no más Corralito, no más comercio del Che,
no más Alca, no más sucios referendos,
no más pingas elecciones, no más ilegal gobierno,
no más compra de votos, no más soborno oficial,
no más amenazas de una tercera guerra mundial,
no más bloqueo económico para la patria cubana,
no más desuniones entre naciones bolivarianas,
no más fumigaciones a las tierras de los campesinos,
no más escuelas norteamericanas para asesinos,
no más falsos profetas, no más falsas religiones,
no más falsos testimonios, no más falsas apariciones.
No más violación a los derechos humanos.
And this is Eduardo Delanderos Tierre, and we have and I'm joined by Ivan Rivero. This is a special one, 55 minute programming. We're going to be looking at the ongoing anti-immigrant legislation taking place, in particular legislation that has been proposed by Chairman James Sensenbrenner on his bill. And we're going to have somebody from Texas, from somebody from Salem area and Woodburn, and also Yvonne will tell you about a couple live guests we have here too.
Right, Eduardo. And today we have a couple of very well-informed guests. We have with us today the visit of Alice Berry, who's an office coordinator at the American Friends Services Committee. And we also have with us Romeo Sosa, who is the director of the Voz Workers Education, Workers' Rights Education Project here in Portland, Oregon. Both organizations are really actively committed in the community here in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Now, we have on the telephone Erica Steinbauer, and she is from CALSA. Are you there, Erica?
Yeah, I'm on.
Great, welcome. First of all, quickly, tell us what CALSA is, quickly, and then let's get into a little bit of educational background and what the Sensenbrenner bill is.
Sure. CALSA is an immigrant rights coalition in Oregon, and we work with, we coordinate with groups in Portland, in Salem, and Woodburn, and we have coordinators also in Eugene and Medford. And we do community education advocacy around immigration reform. Did you want me to talk a little bit about the Sensenbrenner bill?
Yes, please do.
Okay.
And what the consequences are here in the Northwest for the community.
So the Sensenbrenner bill is actually called the Border Protection, Anti-Terrorism, and Illegal Immigration Control Act. And it was proposed and passed in the U.S. House of Representatives by Jane Sensenbrenner, who's actually also the author of the Real ID Act, which some people may be familiar with, which passed last May. So he's one of the most anti-immigrant members of Congress. And that bill passed in the House just 10 days after it was introduced, so it didn't really have time to go through a proper process of actually looking at what's wrong with our immigration, what are realistic ways to reform it. So it's just a really horrible bill, and some of the most troubling provisions in it are provisions that make the 11 million undocumented who are currently in the U.S. ineligible to legally immigrate ever. And it does that by making those undocumented immigrants aggravated felons. It also would criminalize as a smuggler any relative or employer or friend of an undocumented immigrant. And so this bill is generating a lot of concern among like church groups who might have different aid programs or food boxes, and they could be prosecuted as criminals for helping someone who's undocumented. It would also force state and local police to act as immigration agents, even if it's, say, a woman calling in a domestic violence problem. They would still have to ask for her immigration status before helping her. And that's particularly noteworthy in Oregon, because we've successfully stopped attempts to have local police act as immigration officers, and we actually have a statute on the books that prevents that, and so this would overrule that statute. And another really troubling provision in the Sensenbrenner bill is the increased sanctions it puts on employers into screening employees. And the problem in that is that it uses a really flawed database that just isn't, it just won't work for workers, and it will make the unscrupulous employers that much more unscrupulous.
Right. Erica, so I understand that this is possibly the harshest immigration bill that we have seen in 70 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Why? I mean, one of the things that to me is interesting is how it relates to the somehow this is related to the Department of Homeland Security.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Yes, that part of the argumentation of the people passing this bill is that this would add security to our countries, to our country, the borders, etc. But they're talking mostly about the southern border rather than the border, the Canadian border. So,
right. Yeah. Ironically, they're talking about, and actually it was also part of the bill was to increase, funding to build yet more border barriers. And the problem in that is that in the enforcement only, type approach is that it's not really looking at the whole, it's not even addressing the problem, regardless of how people feel about immigrants being here, because if you criminalize the 11 million people who are picking our food and doing the work that makes America work, and then you make them criminals and deport them, what? That isn't realistic for the economy, let alone humane.
Yeah, I think that there's. We're going to see, if this were to pass, we would see that many people are not going to be able to afford food, because the price would be, of course, tagged into all the produce and many other things in which the work of immigrants is an absolute most.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to ask you before you go, because I know you need to go. How is Pikun and Khalsa, how are you trying to address this bill locally and in terms of organizing and how to sort of fight this type of legislation?
Well, maybe Romeo can actually talk about this later on in your program, because Vos is the lead on a coalition that's working in Portland on a march on March 4th for immigrant rights. And it's at 12 noon and starts at Pioneer Courthouse Square. So we've been working with that coalition up in Portland to pull together this march to just have a massive public demonstration that the public is watching, the immigrant communities and labor communities are watching, and that our senators, because now immigration reform is going to the Senate, and our senators will have probably have the opportunity to vote on something by the end of March. So to send them a very strong message that we need strong public leadership from our policymakers for workable solutions and solutions that support the hard work of undocumented immigrants. So we're doing that, and we're doing some education and grassroots education down here in the Valley to mobilize people to that.
Thank you very much, Erica, and for joining us. And maybe once more you might want to announce this march again.
Yeah, it's on March 4th, Saturday, March 4th, starting at 12 noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And Romeo can give his number. If anyone has questions for me, they can also call 503-982-0243, and my extension is 213.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Okay, now we have from the Oregon Farm Worker Ministry, Steve Witt. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, how are you, and how's all of our KBOO listeners?
Great. Okay, you go back a long way in the Northwest. You have you're a veteran organizer, and now we have you here because of that. So let's talk a little bit and get your take on the Sensenbrenner Bill.
Well, I think, because I do so much work with the religious community and helping the religious community understand the plight of farm workers in the Northwest, I think, that the thing with Sensenbrenner is, first of all, it criminalizes, a very vulnerable group of people in our country. And instead of, if they were truly trying to do something about immigration, then why aren't we going after the multinational corporations that have forced people off their indigenous space in Latin America? Why are we going after the immigrants who have nothing, instead of going after the corporations that recruit and hire and continually utilize this labor? I mean, it seems like the most logical approach, if they were going to quote unquote tighten immigration, would be to go after those, but instead they're choosing to go after the immigrants themselves. I think what also is extremely unfortunate is that the church people who are running English as second language classes, provide assistance, financial assistance, just emotional support and assistance, could in turn be criminalized by this Sensenbrenner bill. Because, kids could make everybody a co-felon, if you will, for just an act of human kindness. And particularly if you listen to the gospel message clearly, it calls us that we are to be concerned about our brothers and sisters. That was the whole thing of Jesus' parable, who is my neighbor? And if the churches are really doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're going to be, wanting to help the poor in our midst, and in some cases happens to be, farm workers, and so it's going to criminalize good people as well. I think the other thing is that it's going to just cause a further deepening of the xenophobia that has been, whipped into a frenzy since 9/11.
Okay, now let's sort of pause here, since we have Romeo and Alice, and we also going momentarily have Jay Sear Ureña from Texas. If not, we'll go on with the people we do have here. So, Alice, Romeo, why don't you chime in on this and give us your take now on the Sensenbrenner bills.
Okay. Well, I think Erica laid out very well some of the concerning provisions. Overall, it points to an increasingly anti-immigrant atmosphere that we're feeling around the country. I think it's critical to note that it's important for people to turn out to this march, and in addition to turning out to the march, to write letters to their senators in particular, because as Erica mentioned, the Senate is going to take this up shortly. They're on recess now, but it's a great time to contact them when they're in their local offices. And to note that it's an election year, so hearing from constituents is going to be extremely important. In fact, we've heard from D.C. that that's what they're going to be paying attention to, how they hear from their constituents. And so far, most people are hearing from anti-immigrant forces, so it's really important that everybody takes a moment to write a letter, to call their senator.
And first of all, we forgot to introduce you properly, so tell us who you're with and what you do.
My name is Alice Perry. I'm the office coordinator for the Portland Office of the American Friends Service Committee. We're a Quaker-based organization founded in 1917, and we have immigration work here locally and across the nation.
Great.
And now I'd like to introduce Romeo Sosa, who is the director of the VOS Workers' Rights Education Project. And we're going to conduct this part of the interview in Spanish. Romeo, gracias por estar con nosotros el día de ahora. Thank you, Romeo, for being with us today.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Sí, como ya habían mencionado acerca de los puntos que es sobre el Sensenbrenner, y nosotros creemos de que esto no es una respuesta, sino un ataque a los inmigrantes más que todo, que no es una solución humana a resolver el problema sobre la inmigración. Yo creo que están atacando los grupos más vulnerables y que lo que debería de verse es la migración, ¿cómo se llama esto? Que está mal lo que la cuestión de migración. Entonces, nosotros aquí estamos organizando esta marcha en Portland en coalición con diferentes grupos a nivel local, religiosos y grupos que apoyan a los inmigrantes. Porque también este va más allá de una lucha local. Este también es parte de una lucha nacional que también la Red Nacional de Jornaleros están organizando en diferentes partes del país, en diferentes ciudades, el mismo 4 de marzo. Ese mismo 4 de marzo también se iniciará una carrera, se llama la Carrera Jornalera por la Paz y la Dignidad, que van a salir desde 12 jornaleros desde Los Ángeles hasta Nueva York. Ellos estarán exigiendo durante sus rutas una amnistía o una legalización a todos los inmigrantes que ya están aquí en este país y que están dando mucho a la economía, y que esto del Sensenbrenner es una forma inhumana de tratar de resolver ese problema sobre el tema de inmigración. También creemos de que estos 12 corredores que van por todo el país mostrar pues que ante los grupos que realmente están tratando de crear estas leyes inhumanas, nosotros no vamos a responder de esa manera, sino llevamos un mensaje de paz y que se respete los derechos dignos de cada trabajador y de cada persona inmigrante que está en este país. Y pedimos pues una legalización justa a los inmigrantes que están contribuyendo mucho en este país, y reformar nuestro sistema migratorio que expedite o acelere la reunificación familiar. También queremos crear un sistema que permita que los trabajadores y sus familias que desean emigrar a los Estados Unidos de manera que su ingreso sea ordenado, con seguridad y legalidad, y con todos sus derechos debidamente protegidos. Yo creo que, la acción que estamos haciendo nosotros aquí localmente, en coalición con este grupo grande, queremos hacerlo que toda la raza hispana esté presente, y estamos haciendo volanteos para que la gente llegue a esta marcha. El sábado pasado y el domingo tuvimos volanteando en las pulgas, en diferentes mercados donde los latinos se juntan, y también esta semana se va a poner una en la televisión, en Univisión, lo van a estar viendo, y porque necesitamos decir algo de todos los inmigrantes que estamos aquí, y esta es una manera de la muestra de calle que nosotros estamos impulsando para que mostrar nuestro desacuerdo, nuestro enojo, que realmente este no es la solución como ellos lo plantean en este momento.
We have on from Houston, Texas, Jaycir Ureña. From are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Great. I'm glad. Welcome to our dialogue. We are talking about the Sensenbrenner bill, of course. And mm-hmm. the reason we have you on the line is to get your take from Houston, Texas, in terms of what the impact is there.
Right. It's definitely going to have a tremendous impact. According to the latest census information, the Latino population in Houston comprises 38% of the population, and Houston, coincidentally, is also is the fourth largest city in the United States, and Texas itself, along with California and Florida, are states in which a tremendous amount of the population are Latinos, immigrants, citizens, permanent residents, undocumented immigrants. So it's definitely going to have a huge impact. The reason why it's going to have a large impact is that 80% of Latino families represent mixed family arrangements in terms of the status of the individual, whether they're citizens, residents, or undocumented immigrants. So 80% of families have that mixture, Latino families. So what ends up happening with this Sensenbrenner bill, which one of the focuses of them is to criminalize individuals who are here, that their presence in the United States, they criminalize their presence in the United States, makes them criminals. And what that does to the families is that anyone, since they have expanded what they consider smuggling or smuggling activity, since they've expanded that legal definition in this bill that will impact immigration law, since they criminalize those individuals, then as family members or pastors such as myself, as I'm the pastor of a church, any of us who have contact with these individuals that have been newly deemed criminals, then that really creates a problem. I mean, if I could just present one scenario for you.
Go ahead.
For an individual such as myself that is the pastor of a church, if, according to the Sensenbrenner bill, if I knowingly have undocumented immigrants at my church and I did not report them to Homeland Security, then I myself would also be deemed a criminal. And so what that does is that creates a tremendous problem in the society, because these immigrants have embedded themselves into our society, have contributed, and have really become working and contributing members to American society. And when you immediately begin to criminalize these people and criminalize also anyone who has any type of casual contact, things that would just be considered friendly help, then it's going to create a huge problem in terms of how it's going to impact the penal system, how it's going to impact all the families involved, how it will impact all forms of organizations, businesses, churches, schools, I mean, you name it. Because the Latino population is so pervasive in American society, I mean, the impact would be far beyond any of our greatest imaginations, and that's really what is the concern that we have here.
Yvonne.
Yes. I am just appalled about the consequences that this would have for us as communities uh-huh. of color, people who have relatives, friends in context in our community,
right.
and then what to me is really, really scary is to think that we are bringing into law this sort of laws that were, in my opinion, prevalent in the Europe, in the Germany of pre-Nazi, in the pre-Nazi era. You know, in this case, if someone you know, if I have to tell on a brother, a sister-in-law,
exactly,
or on my cuñado, you know, where does it put me as a human being?
Well, you know, and I think the other piece to consider along that same line, this is Steve Woody from Oregon Farm Worker Ministry, is that, you know, if where's the separation of church and state?
Exactly.
Because, you know, because what it's going to do is you're going to have a few official churches that, you know, that that do not provide comfort and succor to our brothers and sisters, and then there's going to be the ones that really follow, you know, what we believe and are going to be outside the law.
Exactly. It's really pointing to, you know, a tremendous breakdown in terms of many of the civil rights that we've been able to attain in the United States.
Amen.
And that's another thing that is very frightening at the moment, is that not only in immigration legislation, but in legislation as a whole, we're seeing a trend towards a more centralized government, a government that is more invasive, and a government, in essence, that what it is doing is it's putting a premium over control over the rights of individuals. And that's one of the things that we see also with this law, is that we find that a government, by creating this new law, basically what it allows them to do is sidestep institutions that were made to check and create a check and balance in the system. It essentially gives, you know, the law enforcement, local law enforcement, the ability to get in there, deem these people criminals, immediately report them. It's going to allow them to detain people for several days without, it's really unbelievable when you think about it. The part of this thing that is so stunning about it is that no matter how much we really try to look at the situation, I think that if the law is passed, that it is going to unlock things far beyond our imagination, and it will also set an ugly precedent in terms of what our country deems sufficient human rights in general, not only for the immigrant community, but for non-immigrants as well.
And I think the other thing that we need to be very, very cautious about here is, you know, all of a sudden the law enforcement would have the opportunity to pick people up just solely on racial profiling.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and so all of a sudden, you could have a person who maybe they don't speak English well, but have been born and raised in this country. And before, and if they didn't happen to have on them the proper papers, they could be sent out of the country with no due process.
And that's one of the scary things, is that there's really no due process under this bill. And I guess the thing that is also disturbing is how many of our representatives, you know, were in avid support of this. And I think that part of the reason why this immigration issue has become a lightning rod is because the current administration is in the process of doing damage control over many of the policies that they have put into action over the last few years. And so immigrants have unfortunately become sort of the scapegoat.
That's
and
right.
they're doing it under the banner of terrorism. But you know, the Latino community has been a part of American society. You don't see terrorist acts, yet these people are being treated as if they're terrorists. I mean, we're talking about individuals that have been living in the United States in some cases for 17, 20 years, that have children, maybe two or three, four or five children, perhaps, that are here citizens. And these individuals are also going to be targeted by this legislation. I mean, and they're being treated as terrorists. And to me, that's a disturbing thing. And actually, I really find it to be, you know, very, very irresponsible in terms of the administration, because we even have that President Bush has said that if this bill makes it to his desk to be signed into law, that he would put it into law.
Let me interject, give a little bit of background on what this bill is, and then we can go to Yvonne and give us the Spanish on this. But first of all, let me say that there's several faith-based groups oppose the Republican-sponsored immigration and border security bill that could move quickly through the House with a spending package for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the groups say the bill sponsored by House Judiciary Committee Chairman James Sensenbrenner proposes asylum law changes that would hurt refugees fleeing religious persecution and should be debated in full committee hearings. But Sensenbrenner, who is a Wisconsin Republican, says the changes will prevent, this is what he says, would prevent would-be terrorists from slipping into the country by abusing the asylum system. That's what he says. And the changes are tucked into a bill that seeks to prevent so-called illegal immigrants from getting driver's licenses and to complete a fence on the California-Mexico border. Now, let me say, this fence is going to be built, and it's going to cost millions of dollars, and it's happening right now in Southern California. Sensenbrenner's proposals were among the measures that stalled an intelligence overhaul bill last year. And to move the bill, House leaders removed the measures and told Sensenbrenner he could piggyback his measures on the first must-pass legislation on the House floor this session. And that's likely, and let me repeat this, that's likely to be the Iraq and Afghanistan wars spending package. Sensenbrenner's bill would require asylum seekers to prove the central reason for the persecution, and it would allow judges more discretion in deciding whether the asylum applicant must provide corroborating evidence. Higher courts could not overturn the judge's decision on providing evidence. Now, the bill itself, I guess we should be very clear what it is. It's the bill officially is called the Border Protection, Anti-Terrorism, and Illegal Immigration Control Act of 2005, H.R. 4437, and as amended and passed by the House on December 16th. And let me give you a little bit from the bill itself. This is Section 3. Section 3 is called Sense of Congress on setting a manageable level of immigration. And this is from Section 3, which states, expresses the sense of Congress that U.S. immigration and naturalization policy shall be designed to enhance the economic, social, and cultural well-being of the United States of America. And then we go to Section 101 under Title 1, which is called Securing United States Borders. And the title for that is Achieving Operational Control on the Border. And this is from Section 101 of the bill, which states, Section 101 would not later than 18 months after the date of the enactment of the act require the Secretary of Homeland Security to take all actions necessary and appropriate to achieve the main operational control over the entire land and maritime border of the United States using systematic surveillance systems, physical infrastructure enhancements, the hiring and training as expeditiously as possible of the additional Border Patrol agents authorized in the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act of 2004, and increasing the deployment of U.S. Customs and Border Protection personnel. Section 101 also would require the Secretary of Homeland Security to report to Congress annually on progress made toward achieving and maintaining operational control over the border.
Yes, but you're forgetting the part where they're going to, in other sections, it provides that every person that goes through the border is going to be measured by the, you know, sort of by their anthropometrical features.
Yes, let me read that section.
It's kind of an interesting,
yes,
it's yet Orwellian sort of check.
let me give it to you straight from the bill. It says Section 104, and what you're talking about, Yvonne, is called what they call state biometric data enhancements. And let me read from it. This section would require the Secretary of Homeland Security, not later than October 1st, 2006, and in consultation with the Attorney General and the Secretary of State, to enhance connectivity between, and this is their bureaucratic, IDENT and FIS fingerprint databases to ensure more expeditious data searches and collect all fingerprints from each alien required to provide fingerprints during his or her enrollment in the National Entry Exit System. And this includes such things as what they call the e-passport, which is going to have this chip.
Right. But I think also they're going to be checking people by their irises.
Yes, that's part of it.
All of this, you know, which it's so scary. I mean, that's all I can say. And I think this is why it's so, so important that people who are listening take a stand and locally come to this march that VOLS and other organizations in coalition are putting together for Saturday, March the 4th.
Amen.
Yeah.
I wanted to add a few things, but I didn't know, Yvonne, if you wanted to have the opportunity to translate a little bit of what Romeo was saying before that.
Yes. I do want to say this because our conversation with Romeo happened in Spanish, and I'd like to give a brief summary of what Romeo has spoken about. And Romeo, please correct me if I'm wrong at any point. Thank you. And please interrupt me if you see that there's a part where I am not saying what you said. Thank you. So first of all, as we entered into Romeo's participation, he mentioned that as VOS has mentioned before about the Sense and Briar Bill, we VOS believe that this is an attack and not a human solution to the immigration problem. This bill attacks the most vulnerable sectors of the population. It's dealing with what is wrong with immigration. Rather than dealing with it, it's penalizing people. Then he mentioned the coalition, a coalition of organizations are getting together for the march that is happening Saturday, March the 4th. Also, this is part of a larger movement that is of national scope, and it's not just representing the local struggle, because day workers have representation all across the nation, as you could probably seen in a study published recently that was conducted among Washington State day workers. Our local event is going to be taking place, as said, on the 4th. But as I said, is a part of a nationwide run, starting in LA, going to New York, in support of legalization of all immigrants in the country. Then we talked Romeo said that the Sensenbrenner is the wrong way to resolve the situations that are wrong with immigration. We want to ask to expedite a legislation that addresses a reform into the system. We also want to ask for a law that provides a laborer's income that is earned has all the legality and provides for its just payment. And I'd like to ask Romeo at this point, if this were to pass, what sort of things do you see happening? Si esta ley fuera pasar, ¿usted cree que los ataques contra los jornaleros aumentarían y asimismo la falta de pago y otras violaciones al trabajo de los jornaleros? If this law were to pass, do you see that there would be other attacks against day workers, as well as the cases that we know where there is lack of payment of the due earnings of day laborer?
Sí, yo creo que parte de eso, lo que quieren es deportar a los 11 millones de indocumentados que están aquí. Es imposible que esto lo puedan hacer, pero de acuerdo al estudio nacional que se hizo hace poco por la Universidad de California, hay 117 mil jornaleros buscando trabajo en las esquinas en todo el país. Entonces, la preocupación de nosotros que trabajamos con jornaleros, no pueden deportar a 11 millones, pero sí pueden deportar a 11 o a 117 mil trabajadores que son la clase trabajadora más visible y que son los puntos blancos de los grupos antimigrantes hasta este momento. Y también está en la agenda política de los políticos. Yo creo que están viendo cómo quitar los centros de jornaleros, cómo quitar las esquinas. Entonces, creemos que si pasa esta ley, los primeros en ser atacados son este grupo que es muy altamente visible en los Estados Unidos.
And I'm going to attempt to translate what Romeo has said. And he said, yes, in response to the question whether the day workers would suffer were this bill to pass, Romeo answered, yes, that's what they want. And what they want is to, or this law wants to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants. They're not going to be able to do that. But according to the University of California report, the recent report on day workers, it gives a number of 117,000 day workers working in the whole country. This is the most visible of the working class. And because they're visible, this is what these people want to do. They want to take off all the day workers. They want to deport them. And they, for sure, are going to be the first to be attacked.
Okay, let's pause again. That's Jazeer. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And before you go, do you have any last parting observations?
Yes, I just like to say thank you, and I'd like to just say a word of encouragement to all of those of you who joined in a noble cause of fighting against this bill. But in closing, I would just like to say that, you know, what is happening here, I'm from Houston. I'm hearing those of you from Oregon. We have a march planned this Sunday, February 26th, actually. Y'all have a march planned on Saturday, March 4th. What is happening is that this anti-immigrant legislation is really sending reverberations through all of American society. And what is happening is that we're seeing that manifested by hundreds and literally hundreds and thousands of groups that are rising up everywhere and trying to have people come to an understanding of what are the basic human rights that are guaranteed to people of this land. And in the process of doing this, we're able to sort of hear the heartbeat of America. And that's what we're seeing right now, is that sometimes we forget that legislation that is passed, it affects people of flesh and bone, people with sentiments, people with feelings. And what we're seeing is that human aspect of America coming to the forefront during a time in which those issues were sort of pushed aside. And it is my hope and that we will be able to create a movement that will help people to understand what is a necessity to not only support the immigrant community, but to get back to the foundation of the democratic tradition that has made the United States the country that it is today.
Jazeer, thank you. We shall continue to be in touch here with KBOO and you guys over there in Houston. Thanks.
Okay, God bless.
But now, momentarily, we're going to have Pablo Alvarado from the Red Nacional de Jornalero, and we'll have him on the line in a couple minutes or so.
Thank you. And I'd like to continue with our guest, Romeo Sosa, who is the director of the day worker program here in town called Voz Workers Rights Education Project. And our conversation is happening in Spanish, so please bear with us, and I will try to interpret and summarize at the very end. Gracias, Romeo. Nos decías que el día 4 del mes que viene, de marzo, se va a llevar a cabo una carrera a nivel nacional donde van a haber 12 corredores y con unas demandas políticas. ¿Nos podrías platicar sobre esto?
Bueno, este tiene un trasfondo también como cultural. Nuestros ancestros, cuando alguien les odia, no quieren responder de la misma forma con violencia. Entonces, la carrera tiene también algo de eso, que nosotros estamos respondiendo con esta carrera, no en una forma violenta, sino estamos pidiendo paz y dignidad y respeto a los trabajadores, a los inmigrantes, y como seres humanos en este país. Y también demandamos una reforma migratoria justa que reunifique las familias, y que también con esta legalización terminaría la explotación, la discriminación, el abuso y muchas cosas. Es favorable para los americanos, como también es favorable para los inmigrantes. También parte de eso es denunciar las leyes injustas como la propuesta 4437, que es la del Sensenbrenner, denunciar esas leyes injustas y crear más leyes que realmente protejan al inmigrante. Y también, como parte de esto, se va a pasar de ciudad en ciudad, trayendo el mensaje de paz, cruzando ríos, desiertos, valles, llevando este mensaje que nosotros somos una comunidad que también ha aportado mucho. Si los pilares de la economía de Estados Unidos está basado en la ayuda y el apoyo de todos los inmigrantes que estamos aquí, América está construido por el esfuerzo de muchos inmigrantes. O sea, después de ver estos ataques, creemos de que la contribución de millones y millones de trabajadores indocumentados en este país ha sido bastante. Somos visibles al pagar taxes, pero no quieren nuestra visibilidad aquí como trabajadores. Si vamos, echamos un ojo en los campos de California, en los campos aquí alrededor de Oregon, toda la mayoría de la gente son inmigrantes y los patrones dependen de nosotros. Y también, esto es lo que el grupo de corredores están pidiendo en todo el país, de que según el estudio también nacional se dijo que el 75% de jornaleros no tienen documentos. Era una cosa que no queríamos, que es un poco peligroso denunciar, pero se dijo que lo vamos a decir con el único fin de que nosotros creemos que una reforma migratoria justa es la solución, no solo a los jornaleros, sino a todos los inmigrantes en este país.
Gracias, Romeo. ¿Pasamos a la llamada o...?
Sí.
Gracias.
Pablo, ¿estás ahí?
Sí, aquí estoy.
Bienvenido, Pablo.
Muchas gracias por invitarme.
Bueno, Pablo, gracias por tu participación el día de hoy. Quisiéramos saber en tu perspectiva, ¿qué nos puedes decir sobre esta ley de Sensenbrenner que está a punto de pasar al Senado en el país? ¿Cuáles son tus puntos de vista?
Bueno, el punto de vista de la comunidad de inmigrantes, de jornaleros, es de que, bueno, este tipo de iniciativas no es algo nuevo, pero es lo más peligroso y lo más dañino y lo más maligno que hemos visto en el último siglo, diría. Porque en 1920 hubo un acta que excluía a inmigrantes asiáticos, chinos y de otros lugares, ¿verdad?
Sí.
En el continente asiático. Entonces, eso legitimaba mucho el racismo y la discriminación en contra de un grupo étnico y racial. Esa provisión fue afortunadamente desafiada en la corte durante el movimiento de los derechos civiles y se pudo quitar, ¿verdad? Entonces, luego otra nueva reforma migratoria en 1986 toma lugar, otra en 1996 y ahora esta que se quiere llevar a cabo, que desde nuestro punto de vista es lo peor que ha habido. Es algo, del modo como nosotros lo vemos, es un modo grotesco, ¿verdad?, de castigar, un modo grotesco de victimizar, de maltratar a las personas que son más vulnerables, de aprovecharse de esa vulnerabilidad y promover agendas políticas, ¿verdad? Porque en última instancia, este tipo de iniciativas no tiene bajo ninguna perspectiva, bajo ningún punto de vista, el objetivo de resolver el fenómeno de la migración tal y como es, sino tiene el objetivo de usar al trabajador inmigrante como un chivo expiatorio para progresar, para implementar agendas políticas que son muy oscuras, muy racistas, muy que están generando más hostilidad y están lanzando a la comunidad inmigrante más a las sombras y creando un ambiente de terror, un ambiente de miedo, desafortunadamente. Así lo vemos nosotros.
Bueno, yo quisiera preguntarte una cosa. Creo que necesitamos hacer un espacio de traducción porque todavía tengo la cuestión de la carrera que quisiera que nos acaba de comentar Romeo. Pero quisiera ver, Alice, ¿tú crees que nos puedas traducir esta parte?
Bueno, voy a intentar.
Sí.
As what Pablo was saying was giving a bit of a historical context. Yvonne had asked him what he thought of these, of this particular proposal or bill, and he was saying that that they see it as a very one of the most egregious proposals that they've seen in the last century. In 1920, there was the Asian Exclusions Act that was fortunately overturned during the Civil War, civil rights times. And then in 1986, we saw another anti-immigrant bills passing again in 1996. And now we see this, which is probably one of the most grotesque bills that we've seen. Basically, he was stating briefly, because I know we're running out of time, that we see it as a racist attack and an attack on the most vulnerable people that in no way is an actual solution to the reality of migration. Rather, it is a political, using the immigrants as a scapegoat for political means. Espero que sí. Lo traduce más o menos.
Gracias, que excelente.
No, thank you.
Sí. Pablo, yo quisiera preguntarte nada más, hacer el comentario. Nos estamos acá, casi no tenemos ya tiempo. Pero quisiera yo preguntarte dos cosas. Yo quisiera que, o sea, ver la cuestión de que, dada esta ley que pasó en los 20s, después tenemos el encarcelamiento obligado de la comunidad japonesa y no sé cuántas otras comunidades asiáticas durante ese tiempo, y el pensar que va a llevar 40 años, o sea, si esta ley se acabó en 1960 durante el movimiento de derechos civiles, creo que me gustaría pensar que podemos hacer algo como, o sea, todos como parte de una sociedad, para que esto no ocurra también. No se trata, yo creo que en el caso de ahora, de un caso de los hispanos únicamente, porque estamos hablando de los inmigrantes como un grupo multinacional. Pero curiosamente sabemos también que gran parte de este bill está hablando sobre la frontera sur de los Estados Unidos. Entonces quisiera preguntarte cuáles son tus pensamientos al respecto.
Bueno, como dije anteriormente, esta iniciativa no es bajo ninguna circunstancia, ¿verdad? Una solución al fenómeno migratorio. Obviamente el fenómeno migratorio tiene raíces muy profundas que no tienen nada más que ver con lo que sucede en este país, sino también lo que sucede en nuestros propios países de origen, en la relación entre los países industrializados y los países pobres, ¿verdad? Los tratos de libre comercio que son bien injustos y que nada más han constituido un pillaje, un robo de los recursos de los países pobres. Entonces, el fenómeno de migración también tiene sus raíces allí. Entonces, no se puede decir de que vamos a militarizar la frontera y ahí se terminó todo. Y es muy sencillo, bien simple. Cualquier persona, yo como padre, tengo dos hijos, si a mí me toca cruzar 3 fronteras, 5 fronteras, para yo poder darle una mejor vida, un mejor futuro a ellos, ¿verdad? Yo lo voy a hacer, voy a arriesgar mi vida para eso. Y eso es bien sencillo, es la naturaleza de los seres humanos. Por eso los pilgrims, los peregrinos vinieron acá.
Sí.
No es nada diferente, ¿verdad?
Pablo, te agradezco los comentarios. Tenemos ahorita 3 minutos. Quiero comentarle al público, escucha, estamos hablando con Pablo Alvarado, que es el coordinador de la Red Nacional de Jornaleros. ¿En qué ciudad estás, Pablo?
Estamos en Los Ángeles.
En Los Ángeles, gracias. Quisiera pedirle un breve sumario a Alice Perry, que está con nosotros, y pasar rápidamente con Romeo sobre la cuestión de la marcha y el evento. Gracias.
So, again, Pablo responding to Yvonne's question of how he sees this in terms of if it took so many years to overturn those other immigration acts, how how do we respond to this, and what does he see in terms of this? Again, he mentioned that in no way is immigration phenomena is this type of bill going to address the immigration phenomena. In fact, it has a very complicated roots, many roots in the relationship between the industrial countries and poor countries, in the free trade agreements that are essentially a privatization, stealing of the wealth from those poor countries, and then militarization, further militarization of the border is in no way going to become a solution to this problem. And then he said it's the very natural that a parent, a father or a mother of two children who finds himself in a country without resources, without a way to take care of him, is going to risk crossing multiple borders to look for a solution to better their lives.
Thank you. And that was Pablo Alvarado, who's a coordinator of the National Network of Day Workers based in Los Angeles. We're coming back to Romeo Sosa, who's the local director of the Day Worker Rights Project here in Portland. And he was telling us about this run, who is nationwide, and how this is a cultural way of showing that when there's attacks, our population answers in peaceful ways, seeking dignity and dignity, respect, and peace. You want to add something else before?
A partir de unas palabras breves.
Sí, yo creo que si está Pablo ahí, es el que está coordinando la carrera. Si estás ahí, Pablo.
No,
sí,
ya
estoy acá. Okay.
¿Puedes hablar un poquito de la carrera nacional, de lo que está pasando?
Y rápido.
Sí, pues básicamente 12 corredores a nivel nacional van a atravesar ríos, montañas, valles, grandes ciudades, llevando un mensaje de paz, llevando un mensaje de reconciliación con todos aquellos grupos que no quieren a los inmigrantes, que sienten odio. Queremos decirle que el sentimiento no es mutuo. Queremos denunciar las propuestas injustas que existen hasta ahorita, celebrar la contribución de los jornaleros a la economía y a la riqueza cultural de este país, y construir comunidades pues que abracen que el espíritu de la tolerancia, de la paz, ¿verdad?
Gracias.
Para que vivamos en mejores comunidades.
Gracias Pablo.
Sí.
Okay, and this is the end. My name is Eduardo de Landeros Tierre.
Iván Rivero.
Y paz, amor y poesía.
Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 3rd annual Oregon Queer Youth Conference. The conference is open to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, and intersex youth and their allies under the age of 23 to get together, discuss the issues, and have a crazy cool time. The conference takes place at the Caitlin Gable School, located at 8825 Southwest Barnes Road, on Saturday, February 25th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, go to www.oqyc.org.
KBOO Community Radio has an immediate opening for an interim membership coordinator. This is a temporary position lasting for a period of 90 days. The position will be responsible for the oversight of the membership drive and various other duties. For a complete job announcement, please visit our site online at www.kboo.fm. The position closes Friday, February 24th at 5 p.m.